Please be seated. My brothers and sisters, what I'd like to ask you to do is just sit and try to quiet maybe some of the noise of the institutional church out of your head. And I would like to invite you into the space that you and I share a great deal of time with. And that is the place where we know that we are one with God. So join with me just a minute, and let's put ourselves into the presence of God. Thank you. Why I want to draw that distinction to you is that the institutional church sometimes gets it right. Here are two things it got right, and 50 years ago would not have been possible. They elected a female primate. 50 years ago, that would not have been possible. Women weren't worthy to be at the altar. And 50 years ago, it would not have been possible for indigenous people to have a voice anywhere because they probably weren't competent. And yet, today, they do. It is a sad thing, but 50 years ago, most gay people weren't allowed to be out, or we didn't have all the LGBTQRST2, all of it, the whole alphabet. 50 years ago, there were many, many, many people that had to be totally invisible just so they didn't get thrown in jail and die. I want you to sit in the presence of God and know that there's a difference between the institutional church, and I'm not against the institutional church, but I'm not always for it. There's a big difference between the institutional church and the sacramental church, and it is the sacramental church that we live in mostly. The sacramental church always gets it right because it is of God. Whereas sometimes the institutional church, try as it might, sometimes is only of politics. And there are people that know how to play that game, and they do. So I want to speak to you on this sacramental level. And actually, the readings today are perfect. We have Amos. Amos lived in 750-ish BC. He lived in a time when Judah and Israel, by then, two different countries because they had fought a lot. History doesn't change. We're at peace, and the king was pretty powerful, and they were experiencing a country or countries that had prosperity. And the problem with all of that was that it began to set up a social system that had a hierarchy with the king at the top, and then the king's household, and then the priests, and then the prophets, and then and eventually down to the biggest part of the triangle, which was the people. This is a direct violation of the covenant that God had established with God's people. That God said clearly to the people, I am your God, and you are my people. There was no place for distinction or a stratification of who was better. But in 750, because this country had traveled far away from some of its deep religious roots, it had begun to violate the covenant of that universality of the people. And so here comes Amos the prophet. He's not a prophet. He's a herdsman. He's a simple person. He dresses sycamores. Tell me, anybody know what that means? Susan, I sure you would. Thank you. So here's the deal. The sycamore is a relative of a fig. And when the sycamores are beginning to bear fruit, somebody has to go and cut the fruit a little bit, otherwise it doesn't ripen. And the sycamore fruit was the fruit of poor people. So Amos is not a part of any of this big stratification. He's on the thing where he has to go cut fruit off a sycamore tree to get it to ripen. This is not anybody that has any power or influence or status or privilege at all. And he's very clear about that. He said, I'm not a prophet and I'm not the son of a prophet. Whew, I got through that one. He said, I don't belong to any of these classes. This is what God has told me to say to you. You have violated the covenant. And the image that he gets is a beautiful image. It's a plumb line. So a plumb line is a very simple, ancient tool that people use to see if the walls of a building were vertical. So you all know what a plumb line is. It's a string, and then at the bottom of the string you tie a heavy weight, heavy enough so that the wind doesn't move the plumb line, and then you hold it up to a pillar, and you say, yep, good to go. The problem is if you step it up against the pillar and the pillar's out of plumb, the plumb line is going to show that, and there's a point where if the pillar gets so far out of plumb, the pillar isn't going to support anything, it's going to topple over. And that's what Amos has shown Israel to be. He said, in effect, you're out of plumb. Here's something to know about plumb lines. They're always true. You can't cheat a plumb line. If it bumps into something, its effect comes from gravity, which we don't control. Much like God's divine justice. You see, the plumb line is an image of God's justice. That every time we as human beings erect what we think are magnificent temples or things to our status and our power and our privilege, God holds up a plumb line next to them and says, this one ain't gonna work. This is not about love. There is no justice here. And clearly, if there is no justice, we are in violation of the covenant. That's what Amos is saying. And then just to clarify this, the curses that he places on Israel, we got the cleaned up version. They're still pretty strong, but we got the cleaned up version. So if you read this in some original languages, wooey. I mean, it's time to step back and say, I think God might be just a little upset. So that's Amos, the plumb line of God's divine justice. And that justice is always based on you and I being brothers and sisters together. One family. That's the sacramental level of the church, where we experience the unity and the love of God in our hearts. So now we're going to be at the Good Samaritan. This road from Jerusalem to Jericho is, Jerusalem is high in the air and Jericho's low in the below sea level thing. And what Jesus is pointing out to the lawyer who wants clarity, that's what lawyers do, they ask questions. Well, exactly, tell me who is your neighbor? My neighbor, right? So I'm at the University of Vic studying French, kind of, and the teacher isn't quite sure yet. But on the first day of orientation, they were giving the dorm rules. I don't have to worry about that, but here was the dorm rules. After 10 o'clock, the dorms are quiet. And a budding lawyer raised their hand, they're all of 21 years old, and they said, could you give me a definition of quiet? Could you give me the definition of a neighbor? Okay, I will. Ready? All right. So here is a here's a guy that gets beaten up and robbed, and he's at the side of the road. And a priest, looking good, got your robes on, got you looking good. Ooh, God, he's kind of messy over there. I don't want to have anything to do with him. And then the Levite comes by. That's kind of like a deacon. The Levites were kind of a minor order. One has to keep one's privileges. You know? But even the deacon goes past. Look, the priest didn't want to get involved. I don't either. Sorry, Patrick. Now, who's a Samaritan? You know what Samaritans were? They were second class. They weren't really quite right religiously because they worshipped on the wrong mountain. They probably slept with pigs, acted like pigs, thought about pigs, smelled like pigs, and they might have even eaten pigs. And nobody wanted to have anything to do with them because they were some of those people. Not even quite human. Listen to what I'm saying. And it is the Samaritan, moved to compassion to someone that would not speak to him on a good day, moved to compassion to pour oil on wounds and wine as an antiseptic. It is a Samaritan, forgotten, invisible, unloved, disliked, hated, reviled, despicable, nasty Samaritan, not a good religious person. That teaches the lesson from the lips of Jesus into who is our neighbor. Just like Amos, not a part of the establishment, not a part of the privileged few, not any of that. Amos, a herdsman, poor, no power, no position, no privilege, could understand the covenant between God and God's people better than all the professionals. A Samaritan, the stranger teaches us how to be Christian. My brothers and sisters, it is true that there are always going to be people at the edge of our vision. There are always going to be people that we don't see, and sometimes we hide them behind religiosity and pathology. But they're there. And it's God's divine justice that happens. We are people of history, as is God. So, in this people, we are to love one another. We are to make it a point that everybody that God gives to us, we love deeply. That we are to see all people as the Samaritan to teach us how to be good lovers of God's people, We are to set aside the noise and the distraction and the wrongness of the world and place ourselves in the presence of God who loves us. And from there, we see that there really are no strangers, that we are only brothers and sisters, each of us. And our job is to love one another. The rest of it, not worth our time, truly. Let's go be the people of God that we already are. Let's go be people of the sacrament of God and God's love. Let us make sure that here, in our hearts, people see gentleness and kindness and love and acceptance and patience. We are God's beloved. Let us act.